And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I'm doing well. How are you, Ted?
Good. So recently we've been chatting about plastic as a global warming issue. In a recent show, we talked about the greenhouse gases that are released in the entire process of manufacturing plastics and how that that greenhouse gas releases is coming to compete with releases from coal plants. In fact, by the end of this decade, it'll be a significant that the releases of greenhouse gases from the production of plastic will be a significant fraction of gases released in coal plants. But it's also true that, as everyone knows, every sentient being on the planet has a sense that plastics are not good. They end up in bad places. We've all seen your favorite supermarket shopping bag strung in a tree, blowing in the wind in January. I mean, nobody wants that stuff anymore. But there's serious consequences. There's things happening in the manufacture and disposal of plastics that are that people should know about. It's important because it completes the picture of plastic production. To that end, we are honored to have with us Alexis Goldsmith, who is the National Organizing Director for Beyond Plastics, which is a great nonprofit. In addition to having a great title, great name, it's a nonprofit based up in Vermont. Alexis, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back.
Good. Well, glad to have. So you heard the little bit about plastics and where all the plastics go. Can you recap for our listeners briefly what the case is for the climate impact of plastic, and then tell us about where the stuff is made and what the communities that are frontline have to face?
Sure. So Beyond Plastics in October released a groundbreaking report called The New Coal, Plastics and Climate Change. And that report basically shows that emissions from plastic manufacturing are going to outpace coal emissions in the United States by 2030. And this is because plastics are manufactured from oil and gas, but more and more they're produced from the gas liquids that come from hydraulic fracturing. Another thing that our report found was that 90% of these emissions are released into just 18 communities in the United States. Mostly they are along the Texas and Louisiana coasts, but increasingly they are in Appalachia. So this is a significant environmental justice issue because the emissions from these plants aren't just carbon dioxide. Chemicals are added to plastics when they are being manufactured, and there are tens of thousands of chemicals that may or may not be added to give plastic different characteristics, like being stretchy or not stretchy and hard or soft, things like that. And those chemicals are also released in the manufacturing process. And there are people, frontline communities, that are living next to these plants. And really, it is like living a nightmare sometimes. You hear the stories of just the mental anguish of not knowing what that smell is, what you're breathing, the constant fear of explosions, which are actually very common, explosions and fires. And our report found also that these 18 communities are more than two-thirds likely to be Black, Indigenous, or people of color. So this is a racial issue. This is an environmental racism issue, an environmental justice issue. And these communities are also, they make less money, in short, than the rest of the country, which is not surprising. In fact, many of these communities complain that one thing that keeps them trapped there is that their homes have no value since these industries moved in. Their house values just plummeted. And one resident in St. James, Louisiana, where there is a new plastic plant being proposed there called Formosa, said recently she couldn't sell her home for $50. So not only do these people suffer for oil and gas industry's profits, they are trapped, essentially.
Wow. So the you know more about this than I, but I mean, the Formosa, this is a company, okay? Formosa Plastic. Mm-hmm. Formosa, if you don't know your geography, is also another name for Taiwan. So I think this is a foreign company, right?
Yeah. Formosa is a Taiwanese company, and they're proposing to build the largest plastic manufacturing plant in the U.S. in St. James Parish, Louisiana, which is already home to a Marathon refinery, a Valero refinery, a lot of heavy industry. And this plant, if it is built, would be the single largest source of carbon pollution in the United States. And it would be built to manufacture single-use plastics.
Wow. That's a damning statement. Right on the face of it, right? Alexis, tell me that the town you're referring to, I've heard of a place in Louisiana called Cancer Alley. Is that mm-hmm. the same region, right?
Yes. Cancer Alley is an 85-mile stretch of the Mississippi River that is home to some of the dirtiest industries in oil and gas. And that's how it got its name, is that it's basically poisoned those neighborhoods and communities, and they have a much higher rate of cancer, and now they have a much higher rate of death from coronavirus as well. So some of them call it Death Alley. And I really can't speak for them because I don't live there, but I would encourage anybody to look up, some of their stories. Yeah. You can easily find them on YouTube, yeah. Cancer Alley.
Absolutely. But I mean, I think the take home for me is how the privilege of the rest of us to have plastic bags, right, to carry for what single use plastic bags to keep the mm-hmm. lemon in overnight kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And other communities have to suffer the consequence in this. Literally, I mean, I think if anyone listening to this podcast imagines living next door, at the fence of a refinery, can imagine the smells. I mean, mm-hmm. I recently, on the way to Washington, drove through northern New Jersey, which of course is relatively affluent, but man, it was weird. I was saying, what is that smell? Right. And, mm-hmm. and those are different. There's not plastic, but I mean, to be living next to these things must be a terrible fate. And that's something that needs to be taken into account in the solution that we all want to get to. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's unnecessary that these facilities are being built. We do not need more plastic being manufactured. We need to move off oil and gas. So building more petrochemical facilities is really antithetical to our climate and environmental justice goals. Yet the oil and gas industry hopes to quadruple plastic production in the next 40 years.
So just to the terrible story here. One, which we've talked about, frontline communities, people that are, for various reasons, are trapped living next to refineries in a very limited number of communities and bear the brunt of all the damage for the rest of us to have plastic bags. Then, Alexis, tell us, is there a story around where the plastic goes once it's been used? I think it's exported. It ends up in, God knows, what happens to it?
Sure. So the world has produced nearly 10 billion tons of plastic since 1950. That's more than a ton of plastic for every person on Earth. A third of that plastic, it's estimated, has leaked into the environment, which is really tragic. Our oceans are quickly becoming landfills. 12% of that roughly has been incinerated. So things like Wheelabrator and Covanta incinerators are very common ones. These are facilities that supposedly generate energy from burning garbage, but really they mostly just get paid to burn garbage. People live next to those facilities. Also, up until
You may know, but there's a Wheelabrator plant in Revere, just north of Boston. You know, you see the tweets all the time where the thing turns on at midnight so that you don't see please continue. Sorry for the interruption.
No, that's okay. I mean, if you live next to a smokestack, you're probably familiar with the impacts of plastic on our air quality. And it's not just the burning, it's the exports. So up until 2017, a majority of our plastic, quote unquote, recycling was actually being shipped to China, where it was winding up as pollution. And China now no longer accepts contaminated recycling. We don't have a place to send our low value plastics. So the United States is increasingly trying to send it to Malaysia, Western Africa, or to burn it or landfill it. And overseas, it wound up, you know, in these coastal communities that don't have an infrastructure for plastic, and plastic is flawed by design. It's, we can't waste manage our way out of the plastic pollution issue. It's not an issue of we need better collection or better recycling. It's just, there is no way to manage something that doesn't biodegrade. Because it just has to accumulate somewhere else, whether it's as air pollution or water pollution. But literally, it's turning people's yards and communities into landfills, and it's plugging up rivers. It's ruining fishing lifestyles. It's hurting indigenous lifestyles because they can't fish. It's just really a global, international social and environmental justice issue.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen these pictures of the, you know, beaches just completely covered with, you know, Aquafina bottles, right? Mm-hmm. It's such an outrage. I mean, I read somewhere that every toothbrush you have ever brushed your teeth with still exists somewhere. Right. Mm-hmm. It didn't go away. Right. It's still out there. Every pen you've written with still exists somewhere. And tell me but there is a physical process. So that, I guess that's a lead into, I think they call it microplastics. I mean, what happens over the course of time is this stuff slowly gets fragmented for various reasons. Right.
Mm-hmm. So plastic that winds up in the ocean, it's estimated that 15 million tons of plastic are entering our oceans each year. Gets degraded by the sun, by UV rays, and by mechanical abrasion of the wind and the waves, and breaks down into smaller and smaller pieces until eventually you can't even see those pieces. And microplastic from plastic pollution in the environment is now ubiquitous in our earth, in our air, soil, and water. So the average person is ingesting an estimated 5 grams of plastic every week. So that's like if you took a credit card and cut it up and put it in your smoothie, that's how much plastic you're eating every week. We're also, yeah, it's true. And babies are more impacted, unfortunately. We're also breathing microplastics. So an estimated 2-6% of airborne dust is microplastic. So we're breathing it as well. Microplastics have been found in human lung tissue. They have been found in placentas. And we are, you know, humans actively avoid eating plastic, right? So wildlife is much more greatly impacted because they don't know the difference. They accidentally ingest it. They feed it to their young. And more than 90% of seabirds are impacted by plastic pollution in marine environments. More than 2,500 marine species have been documented to have eaten microplastics. We know that it kills animals and wildlife, which is really concerning because the World Wildlife Federation estimates that we've lost 2/3 of our wildlife since 1950. And that's a trend. Mass extinction is a trend that is going to hurt everybody.
Oh my God.
Just to make plastic bags, like we don't need more beach cleanups. We need to make less plastic.
So tell me, Alexis, what can people do? I completely agree. I mean, you know, you got to choke it at the source, right?
People need to get involved civically. Civic engagement is the way to solve this issue. So lobby your representatives, ask for a constituent meeting to co-sponsor the Break Free from Plastic Pollution Act of 2021, which is the most comprehensive bill ever introduced in the federal government to address plastic pollution. Support the End Polluter Welfare Act, which would end fossil fuel subsidies, which are driving the build out of plastic production in the United States. I mean, your tax money is being built to essentially poison communities in Texas, Louisiana, and Appalachia. Yes.
I mean, that's a remarkable connection. That's a
right. Sorry. It's not just about energy security or heating your homes. The oil and gas industry loves to say we can't live without oil and gas or we'll all freeze in the winter. We do need people to be warm in the winter and cool in the summer and keep their fridge cold and things like that. We need to decarbonize our energy sector. But what the oil and gas industry doesn't say is that they're turning oil and gas into plastics, which go on to poison our, literally poison our environment. And that is being driven by federal subsidies that are paid for with our tax dollars.
All right, so I'm going to say it again. It's the Break Free from Plastic Solutions Act.
Plastic Pollution Act.
Pollution, right. I'm sorry. I'm getting my pollution solutions, all that mixed up. There's an act. So, dear listener, there is a bill before Congress. You can call your congressperson and ask them to be aware of this. You can take a look at the report, which is at the Beyond. Lex is going to tell us that link again in a second, but the link will be also at the MCAN blog. There is something you can do about this, which is to stop production at the source, to curtail this, right?
Mm-hmm. So, right. And that's beyondplastics.org /plasticsandclimate.
Super. Look, we got to put it down there. As I said, we'll put up links to all this stuff on the blog. The blog will be at massclimateaction.org/blog. If you have questions about this podcast, please send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone. And the recycling of that, the reuse of that, keep that smartphone for as long as you possibly can, because it's not going anywhere either, right? There's a whole other discussion there. But on your smartphone, tell all of your friends to listen to us on their smartphone using their modern podcast distribution app. I want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing and excellent research support. I want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future. And we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon that reflects environmental justice communities, respects environmental justice communities. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Alexis, thank you so much for enlightening us. This has been, again, a very useful and informative discussion.
My pleasure. And your listeners can also email me at alexisgoldsmith@bennington.edu.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.